begin.
Please note that the following program includes adult themes and language. You're listening to the weekly show on Discourse.
Yeah, I'm back.
Welcome back to Discourse. I'm Morgan Nickel, Big Mouth Dickhead from the internet.
And I'm Dylan Reeve, well-rounded individual.
Well-rounded since you've been eating too much, is that it? Not doing enough exercise?
Are you calling me fat?
I'm not calling you fat. I would never throw that stone from my glass house. Tell you what, though, just funny coincidence, something we haven't spoken about. At the gym the other night, Selena wanted to go and do yoga, and it's like 2 hours or 90 minutes or something. And normally we're in and out in about 50 minutes or an hour. So instead, I was on the cross trainer for much longer than normal. I did over 10Ks, which is twice as much as normal for me. And my legs still hurt. It's 2 days later, my legs are friggin' killing me. Jeez, I did great, though.
When I joined a gym a while ago, my first session, after going through the routine the first time, the first proper session I had, I spent quite a while on the cross trainer.
Yeah.
At the end.
Yeah.
And that was all fine, except my gym is downstairs.
And then you had to walk up some stairs.
I had to walk up the stairs. I was like, I'm not going to make it.
That's hilarious. Yeah. Even though they provide a trainer at my club, I've never bothered taking advantage of it, so I just do whatever. So I'm probably, working completely counter to my own interest and wasting my time. But I just do what I enjoy. Sure. I don't even know what the machine's called, the leg curl, where you push your legs up, and just because I like looking at my thighs when I do that, because my thighs just go wa-ba, and I look like one of those Olympic cyclists, ba-ba, my thighs, ba-ba, ba-ba, like that. I like that machine, and I like the pull down. Love the pull down.
Those ones feel like you're doing a lot. That's always good.
Yeah. And of course, I feel like I'm doing a lot, but then sometimes I come to the machine and it's like on twice the weight that I can do one rep of. And I'm like, holy shit. I've got a feeling that some people go through and as they finish, they just turn it up heaps. just to make themselves look awesome. Like I get in there, I can do 90 kilos and that is really hard for me. Really hard. Maybe I could do two. Probably I can do one, and I feel like my whole body is working at it.
Not sure that's how it's supposed to work out, but all right.
No, well, that depends. I mean, it depends. Well, yeah. There's different approaches to the old strength training, and some say that doing the biggest weight you can possibly do, and very few and far between, actually might be a good way to make yourself strong. But there's different things, I guess. I'm not really there to get strong. I'm there to stop being a fat fuck, and so doing one rep is probably not the way to go about that. Anyway, this episode, we were not going to talk about our misguided ideas on personal training and exercise and fitness.
Although a good podcast that would be.
That would be excellent. I think that we would increase our listenership tenfold, probably, but they would all be lonely housewives who want to believe that they can keep eating the horrible shit that they eat during the day when they're at home with their dirty children. And yet still be attractive to their husbands who are tired of them. That would be the entirety of our listenership. And I would say, if we've got any of this, I think don't worry about your husband not being interested. Just have an affair.
I can't.
Because he probably is.
Probably. Excellent. Not where I thought that would go.
No. So this week we were going to speak at length about the Tony Scott suicide story it just happened, so it's been really big the last couple of days since it happened.
Yeah.
And Dylan spoke with representatives of the New Zealand Mental Health Foundation and invited one of their experts to come and discuss it with us, but they have a policy of never commenting on specific cases, and so they weren't really keen on talking about it. So maybe we can talk to them in general some other time. Because we can't get an expert on, and actually, just mentioning that it was their policy not to comment on specific cases made us wonder if it's wise for us to talk about it either. I mean, now we don't have an expert. It's just, a couple of idiots. So
the thing I hate the most about channels like Fox News, in fact, any 24-hour news channel, is that they have a lot of time to fill up talking about nothing, and shit that they don't know anything about, breaking news and the like that they haven't got any information on yet. And it's like that with the Tony Scott thing. He's quite apparently committed suicide. Yeah. It's hard to imagine why. We don't know. We can speak a little we want, but we're not speaking from a place of we don't know him, and we don't really know anything about suicide in a real sense.
No.
So we probably don't help by talking about it. I was kind of interested in talking about it because it's interesting that you look at someone who appears to have all their shit together.
Yeah.
In terms of, someone who's achieved a lot in their life, they have presumably no financial troubles, and then they end it.
Yeah.
Leaving behind, a wife and two children, and that is unfathomable to me. So that part of it's interesting to me, but then that is in a more general sense.
Depression is a hard thing to deal with. Now, when it was, some people claimed that he had an inoperable brain tumor, but his family
has spread around.
That's right, but his family is saying that just isn't true. But while that was, the rumor, I thought it would be interesting to talk about in the context of voluntary euthanasia. But now that we don't know if that's true or not, and it sounds like it's bullshit, we don't even have that angle. So really, this is a story. This only affects his friends and family, and we are neither of those. So we should butt the fuck out and let his friends and family mourn.
Feel connected to it, as we have a relationship with his work, but. Yeah. But we don't know what the fuck we're talking about,
we
should stop
about.
Immediately.
So that's us addressing that, and we're not going to talk about it anymore.
Done.
That's as mature as we get. So speaking of being mature, being professional, I've learned that there is in professional broadcasting, there's something. Now you'll remember this from your days at where were you? Radio Live, Radio Pacific.
Radio Pacific before it was Radio Live. Yep.
There's something called a sneeze button.
Cough switch.
A cough. Is it a cough switch?
Well, different people have different names for it. But yeah, cough switch. It's
so
a momentary mute.
I got a sneeze button installed, just so that we'd seem really professional. Let me try it out.
Yeah. No, I think you should probably look at a cough switch. It's more traditional with New Zealand broadcasting.
All right. Let me just see if it's got.
No, that's pretty good.
All right. There we go. It's also got.
I don't remember that one being used in the studio at Radio Pacific.
It's so professional. So what is the purpose of that? I mean, why would you have that in a professional broadcast? We've got it anyway now. So I feel like the studio is more or less complete.
That's kicked us up a notch.
Yeah. Professional as, bro. So we have now... Listeners at home and on the live stream or listening to the podcast, we have last week we sort of ran out of stories, and after discussing it with the chat room before we started the broadcast tonight, they didn't really notice the difference, but I felt a difference, and I don't know, Dylan, did you feel like there was a difference?
Do you remember there was that time once upon a time a long time ago where we used to have a countdown? The stories were a minute long or something.
Yep.
Optimistically. Yeah, yep. that was a fun time, wasn't it? Now they can just stretch on forever.
Well, they can, but last week apparently we didn't have enough stories. So this week we have all the stories. But I don't know how many have you got. I've got probably 25. How many have you got?
I don't know. I had a lot when I first looked at the show document, at the rundown, and I started packing it out with stories. You had two.
Yeah.
And then I went away, and then when I came back, you had like 30.
All right, well, let me get my first
one.
You
had literally two whole pages of story links. Literally.
It's like the good old days when we had a 3-hour long episode. Of course, it's still only going to be an hour, so we're going to have to really crack into this. Are you ready? I'm going to say...
And now the news.
Nine. I have 9 stories, by the way. I just counted.
But first up,
you might have heard me.
Well, while I do my...
Corrections.
You can count mine as well. So last week I spoke a little bit about dating site fraud being the being I think 2/3 of online fraud related losses, and someone called Thomas Lumley on statschat.org.nz has made a post called "Cybercrime Misrepresentation Soars," and that is why this is in
corrections,
because essentially it sounds like it's just completely bogus.
Made up numbers.
Yeah, completely made up numbers.
And then further stuff extrapolated from those made up numbers.
And that there was apparently something like $625 million in 1 month, fraud-related losses, and that two-thirds of that was dating site-related fraud. So that would be this is per year, not per month. So that's $400 million per year from online dating scams in New Zealand, which does actually seem, you know, when you even take the time to think about the numbers for one moment.
That's $100 for every single one of us.
Yeah, well, I mean, I lost none.
Me either.
Seems a bit implausible. So someone's lying, basically.
I think that same article doesn't mention the value of dairy farming to New Zealand is something like $1.1 billion,
right,
per annum or something.
Right.
So, you know, the online dating fraud is, you know, like a third of dairy farming.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem
quite
right.
The total profit from New Zealand beef exports.
Not beef exports. I knew it was cows.
It's about 25% profit on $2 billion gross. And so this is probably more, actually, than that. So it's utter rubbish. But let's just say, in my defense, usually when we do corrections, it's because I've got something completely wrong. This time, I think I did read the story as it was reported, but the reporting, strangely enough in New Zealand, was bullshit.
So it was based on a press release issued by an advocacy group, in this case NetSafe, with their own random numbers. And no fact-checking was done.
Yeah, that's right. No fact-checking at all. Bastards. Why wouldn't they do some fact-checking? Tell you what. You know, something else, actually, that didn't get people upset. So I don't know why
stories,
I'm saying,
by the way. You have 22.
I have 22? Well, I mean, my guesstimate of 25, that was actually pretty close.
Corrections.
I don't have 25. I've got 22.
Hmm.
Seems like enough. You know what? So here's a wonderful. I've got to do something about managing these tabs. I've got so many tabs. I think I'm going to put them somewhere else. I'm going to. Oh god, it's going to make so many windows. I need some special software to handle this many stories. I can't see the titles in my browser. It's just an endless row of icons.
Can you stack the tabs in?
Can you do that in Chrome?
In Chrome? I don't know. Yeah, I know there was an add-on for Firefox that used to make it possible.
Oh, I can look at the I can look at the task manager. That shows me tab titles.
Good lord.
But
why not just click on the stories as you need them? Anyway, what's next?
Well, probably you.
And now the news.
Oh, where shall we begin? Good God, there's so much stuff. I like Julian Assange. Not particularly.
Do
anyway,
you?
I like the story. Have you been following it?
We talked about it briefly
last week, didn't we?
He took refuge in the Ecuador embassy in London,
mm-hmm.
and hid out from the police, who were he broke the conditions of his bail. I think, right?
Yeah.
The extradition to Sweden had been approved by the court, and I think he had some small amount of time in which to present himself for extradition. And instead of doing that, he ran for it and ran to an embassy.
And claimed asylum. Under political persecution. Nothing to do, in theory anyway, nothing to do with the charges against him in Sweden, but to do with supposed probable charges or attempts by the USA to get their hands on him. Anyway, there's a cult of Assange. To some extent, and that is people who he seems slightly self-deluded about what's going on. Well, maybe he's not, but he's certainly paranoid. Anyway, so last week we talked about this. I think it was last week, and I'm pretty sure I said out loud on the podcast radio that I didn't understand why the Swedish prosecutors, who haven't charged him, they've only issued an arrest warrant to question him. I didn't understand why the Swedish prosecutors couldn't come and question him in the UK. Which is something a lot of people have said, and it's, in fact, possibly the number one thing about how ridiculous this all is. Turns out the Swedish criminal system is a bit different.
Sure,
in fact, the point where it's at in Sweden, in terms of the legal system, would be equivalent to having been charged under the English process.
Right.
So, and the various courts that he appealed this to found that and agreed with that, and also found that the other thing was that it wasn't really rape. Which is a whole different thing, don't want to go there, but also found that there was a charge to answer to. It would be a crime in English law.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's had a lot of due process and so far. He's a man who's accused of sexual assault at the very least, rape.
15 minutes.
By some counts. Mm. And everything that's happened is normal due process. Now, the argument is that if he goes to Sweden, they'll just extradite him to the USA, and he wants to have this. So the second thing is, Assange said he'll go to Sweden if the Sweden will just guarantee not to extradite him to the USA, which is another thing they can't really do because there's international treaties, and all extradition requests, of which there has been none from the US to Sweden or the UK, all extradition requests have to be handled on their merits, and the Swedish government's not in a position to say, well, no matter what happens, we won't extradite you, because, you know, they can't make that kind of guarantee. It would be against the conventions that they've signed. So, yeah, it's weird. I don't know what'll happen. I think he should face up to the criminal system in Sweden.
I agree. I understand, I read, as an aside, that Sweden doesn't even support extradition on the charges that he would probably face in the US.
Well, he's not facing any charges in the US. He hasn't been indicted in any way.
Well,
so,
no, but if he was, then...
Yeah, they won't extradite for political crimes.
Right.
They won't extradite anyone who could potentially face a death penalty.
Right.
They won't extradite in cases where they believe torture is likely. Mm. Any extradition from Sweden would also be subject to UK approval, because the UK approved him to, extradited him to Sweden, so therefore the UK gets a say as well.
Yeah.
In Sweden, it would go through all the levels of the courts in Sweden. Well, actually, no, it wouldn't go through all the levels. It would go straight to the Supreme Court in Sweden to be judged on the merits of the extradition request. And then after that point, the government actually does have a veto power, but they can't exercise that veto power ahead of a criminal investigation, or, you know, ahead of a request being received and judged.
I think that he's proven himself to be untrustworthy. I think that he's also proven himself to be an extraordinary egomaniac. And this is only my prejudice and opinion, but I also think that whatever those women say he did, he almost certainly did it.
Yeah, certainly.
And I think that all this stuff about being extradited to the US, it could be a real fear, but what he's more afraid of is the fact that he sexually molested, pestered, battered, whatever, those women. And I think that he knows that he's going to be exposed if he goes to Sweden.
Now, the argument about Sweden is that in 2000, and I'm going to say 2001, might have been 2002, yeah, they extradited two Egyptians who were turned over to Mubarak's government.
Right.
Now, those extraditions actually happened outside of Swedish law. They shouldn't have been allowed. Mm. Sweden has since changed laws to make that more enforceable. The person who was responsible for it was apparently facing investigation and charges in Sweden, but in fact was murdered.
Yeah.
And what was the other thing? Sweden unreservedly apologized, paid damages to the people involved, and in fact one of them was granted permanent Swedish citizenship or residency afterward.
Yeah.
So I think if anything, a country that's been through that once before, it's probably less likely, surely, to repeat the same issue.
Oh, God, I've just realised we've got a bunch of sexual abuse stories, so it's probably too late to say trigger warning, but trigger warning. I think that for the next story, let's get them all out of the way now, and then we can go on to the stuff that's a little bit cheekier.
Good, what's next? Where do you want to go?
I think your next one is ha, 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 that's how it starts.
Next story.
Oh, right, yes. ha ha ha, sexual assault by our pizza.
Yeah.
So Hell Pizza, you may have missed this. It was kind of a flash in the pan thing. Mm-hmm. Hell Pizza ran a competition on their Facebook page called The Confessional. And the deal was you confessed something and they picked a winner, and the winner got some free pizza. So
here it goes. I was once at a party and saw this utter wanker. He passed out, so I put a mask on and stuck my cock and balls into his mouth till he woke up. To this day, he still has no idea who it was and gets shit for it all the time.
Oh, the lols.
Oh, the lols. It's so funny. Now, let's change the genders a little bit. If that was a woman who had been passed out and had a cock shoved into her unconscious mouth, what would everyone say about that?
Hopefully not the same things they said.
Golly,
about
it's so funny. Ha ha. Why are you being upset about it? It's just a prank.
So Hell Pizza went on to say, "Hi everyone, tonight we posted a fan's confession, seeing it in the spirit of a prank between mates. Once we understood that offence had been taken and saw the bad light the post could be seen in, we removed it and we apologised to those offended. Lesson learned." Anyway, so there was a minor media outrage. Hell Pizza ended up donating $10,000 to Wellington's Rape Crisis Service.
Yeah.
And offering to match donations made by other people up to a certain, up to whatever.
Which I've got to tell you, I'm actually delighted about, because after philosophy correspondent and whatever else we call him, Ryan Sproul, mentioned on his website, statehighway1.com, that they were in dire straits, I'd given them $60. So Hell doubled my donation.
Yep, and you didn't even need to buy any pizza.
Didn't need to buy any pizza. So while Rape Crisis were very worried that they were going to have to close their doors, they were definitely far underfunded. Now, partly because of that idiotic post, they're all right again for a little while.
Now, they issued a press release after Hell Pizza made their offer, saying, among other things, that it's unfortunate we have to be in a position to accept this donation because... Yeah. Obviously, it's difficult for them. They don't really want to accept what kind of is, you know, make
blood
it better money from Hell Pizza.
Yeah.
But they had to, and they did, and it all works out for the best. But I haven't bought any Hell Pizza for a long time anyway, and I don't particularly want to. And as a company, I'm off them, and their pizza's shit. So.
Hell Pizza is so bad.
Yeah, but some people still like them, so there you go. Hopefully, they won't post any more stories of rape on their Facebook page.
Have a Sal's pepperoni, a Sal's cheese pizza, oh my, a Sal's vegetarian pizza, as long as it's really, really fresh, like super hot from the oven.
Yeah, you want to be careful because those pizzas, I've had the worst roof mouth burn of my life came from a Sal's pizza.
Yes, but the risky run, Sal's pizza, the golden hour, the golden period in which it goes from absolutely delicious and fresh to... kind of
soggy, cheesy
cardboard. It's really short. It's a very short window. So you've got to get
it. That's
why
you keep eating it. Even though you've already burned your mouth, you just keep going and you keep burning your mouth.
Man,
it gets
worse. Sales is good. And they're opening one just in Parnell, actually. They've already got the shop fitted out. I don't think it's actually opened yet, but I'm very excited about that. When at the old Discourse Studios up in next to the High Court, we were just inside the Sales Segway delivery area. And I'll tell you what,
segwaying their pizza up to you.
Segway delivery is—it's like they are perfect use for a Segway. If you see those guys rocketing around with, you know, a pizza bag strung from one arm, they move so fast. Brilliant, beautiful, electric, wonderful. Electric because, of course, you know, it's a Segway.
Yeah. So what else? I think I got one more in this
story.
Approximate vein.
Yeah.
You can't have missed this one, I'm sure. Republican. What is he? Congressman and soon to be Senate candidate, I believe.
Yeah.
Still, I'm not sure. I haven't kept up on the exact details. People were pressuring him to stand down. Todd Akin, in an interview on television, said that when asked about abortion in cases of rape, they call it pro-life, I call it anti-abortion.
Yeah.
When asked about abortion in cases of rape, said, "From what I understand from talking to doctors," I'm not going to read the exact quote, but from what I understand from talking to doctors, it's very rare. In cases of legitimate rape, the woman's body has ways of shutting it down.
What the fuck is legitimate rape?
Well, that's a whole interesting kettle of fish to get into, isn't it? There's in the anti-abortionist canon, there's an issue about what is rape and what isn't. So they tried to change. There was a law, a federal law about using federal funding for abortions. Which would make it only acceptable in certain cases. So basically, federal funding couldn't be used for voluntary abortions. It could be used in cases of rape, incest, and where the mother's life was at risk.
Wait, what? Involuntary abortions?
No, voluntary.
I am completely against involuntary abortions under any circumstances, unless the mother has, for instance, been injured in a terrible car crash and she is absolutely going to die.
Or diverting unnecessarily.
I'm sorry, I apologize. Carry on.
That's okay. They were so that he and actually Paul Ryan, who's the current Republican vice presidential nominee.
No, he's running mate.
Yeah, well, running mate. He and Paul Ryan tried to have the wording in the bill changed to forcible rape from rape. essentially,
what is forcible rape versus rape?
The idea being that some people might just want abortions and go and claim they were raped and it was a drug rape or something that wasn't a proper rape. Anyway, there's this idea amongst certain anti-abortionists that that there's such a thing as a proper rape or a forcible rape or those other words.
Ah, yeah, there's a Jezebel, there's a guide to the official guide to legitimate rape.
Yeah.
And it includes politico rape. Forcible and or assault rape. Marriage rape, aka
assault rape, that was the other
aka
one.
Just kidding, lol, doesn't happen rape. Rape. Grey rape. Date rape and rape. All kinds of different kinds of rape. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. We need to get away from this story now.
Anyway, so he said that he's a giant fucking douchebag. But the thing is, it's not unique to him. It's not something he came up with by himself. It's actually he's just spoken out about something that is commonly held within certain circles. This yeah. idea that there is no such thing as a pregnancy from proper rape.
I'm trying to find a thing. There we go.
Next story.
All right. This has got media that goes with it.
How well do you know your body? I mean, it's amazing. It cools us down when we're too hot. It heats us up when we're too cold. You know, even that bit of discharge in between our period is our body working to keep the vagina healthy. And that damp, less than fresh feeling is why Carefree has designed these ActiFresh liners with an absorbent core to lock away wetness and odour, helping you feel clean, dry and fresh every day. But don't just take my word for it. Get your free sample today. Know yourself. Know Carefree.
So after that ad for panty liners aired on TV in New Zealand, I think it's actually originally an Australian ad, and I first encountered it linked from Metafilter, where they were very impressed that it was airing on TV, because in the States it would never play, because the woman with the cute voice there is naked but concealed behind foreground elements, like, you know, flowers and tables and so on, and you know, just talking straight up in a what's it called, psych white background, roughly something like that. Anyway,
yeah.
Anyway, so they made a complaint to the what are they called, Advertising Standards Authority
ASA,
and they for instance, there was one complainant who was referred to in the ruling as K Spice, who said they were disgusted that this advertisement is on TV. I have a 9-year-old
disgusted.
Who is up until 8 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. and he definitely does not need to hear words like that. Words like vagina.
And discharge.
What's the problem? Another complainant said the pairing of a naked woman and the word vagina was overly sexual.
Mm.
Which, I mean, possibly there. I mean, there is a sexual element, of course. Of course. But overly sexual, I don't know. I think it's just, you know, normal stuff that adults should be comfortable saying. Vagina. Oh, my God. I'm so afraid. You don't need to worry about words like vagina or uterus.
Discharge.
Labia.
Moist.
You better not say moist, because a lot of women don't like the word moist.
I know.
Or panty. Apparently, panty and moist. Terrible words for a lot of women. Anyway, the Advertising Standards Complaints Board, disagreed with all the complainants and said there was nothing pejorative about the anatomically correct name for a body part, especially when taking into account the product being advertised. So basically, shut up, fuck off.
People will keep complaining about it.
Yeah.
They'll complain to the broadcaster. Someone will try and start a petition. Who knows?
As for the woman's nudity, the Advertising Standards Complaints Board said, she was shown from a distance, no genitalia was visible, and the appearance of the woman was neither salacious nor titillating. There are no grounds to proceed with the complaint, they said. So, very well done, ASCB, and I would like to see more.
Oh, that's ASCB, so that's the Australian one.
Advertising Standards Complaints Board.
Yep, that's the Australian one.
Is it? This just says Advertising Standards Complaints Board, ASCB.
That's pretty sure that's the Australian one. The New Zealand one is on 3 News.
Why does it not say anything about Australia then in this news article?
I don't know.
Maybe it's
been taken from a wire, but ASCB is the Australian one.
Anyway, New Zealanders and others, people everywhere in the world, grow the fuck up. Vagina.
Oh no, you're right. I'm wrong. I'm actually wrong.
Just a second.
Corrections.
Go on then.
the Advertising Standards Authority has within it an Advertising Standards Complaints Board. There you go.
There you go.
The Australian one's also called something very similar. Right.
30 minutes.
So basically, grow up. Stop Good. It. Stop Done. It.
Next story.
Forgotten fork puts man in hospital. So it might be like, oh, he had it between the cushions on the sofa and he sat down. It's a one in a million chance. He got it right in his bottom. No. This British man was rushed to hospital with stomach pains. He had forgotten that he swallowed a fork almost a decade ago.
No, he hadn't.
Lee Gardner, age 40, had cramps and was vomiting blood when a surgeon at Barnsley Hospital asked him if he had swallowed anything strange. I said no. But when he said, are you sure? I can see prongs of what appears to be a fork. I remembered accidentally swallowing one years and years ago. The plastic fork had caused an ulcer, leading to bleeding in his stomach. He underwent 45 minutes of surgery to have it removed and is expected to make a fork. How do you accidentally swallow a fork and forget about it?
Maybe it was just the head of it. Like, if it's a plastic fork, maybe it was just the head of the fork or something. But
what, he bit so hard he went straight through the thing and then kept chewing and swallowed. I know that
and
you eat fast.
Didn't immediately think, you know what, I've just swallowed a sharp, pointy thing. Maybe I should go and seek some sort of medical attention.
People terrify me, Dylan. Did you know that? People absolutely terrify me.
Fair enough.
Because if, let's just take it that the story is legitimate on the face of it. What the hell?
Very, very drunk.
Yeah. Maybe that's true. Right. Maybe that's true. Maybe it was a,
Next story.
Do you want to know how to get away with a crime?
I already know how to get away with a crime. Go to discourse.co.nz/VPN.
I bet it's expensive.
Just a second.
Corrections.
That is not true. It's completely legitimate, and I don't suggest anyone do anything illegal ever. Sorry, as you were.
Good. All you need to do is generate a lot of evidence against you.
Yeah. I can do that. I could definitely do that.
So the US federal government has 400,000 pages of evidence against fugitive Miami doctor Amado Anglio, who basically was selling drugs illegally on the internet, selling controlled substances on the internet.
Yeah.
The evidence takes up approximately 2 terabytes of storage.
Well, that's not much. I've got that. I've got several times that just on the desk here.
It is not much. Unfortunately, the DEA, who are managing this case, for presumably policy reasons, have to store it on their standardized network storage, whatever.
And, right. So this has got like some sort of evidence tracking thing. It'll log accesses,
probably,
and it's probably got like
stuff.
Redundancy stuff built in and all of that.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that 2 terabytes represents approximately 5% of the DEA's entire worldwide storage.
Yeah. Wait. But that means they don't have very much storage, Dylan.
What's that, 40 terabytes
overall? Holy shit. How? I mean, I think that at work we might have more than that at work.
Yeah. So, they just dropped the case and chucked out all the evidence. Just clear some disk space.
Well, lucky for some. I hope he wasn't a violent criminal in addition to his illegal controlled substances dealing, because what the hell? Oh my God.
Yeah.
An interesting question from the chat room. What are they storing it as? Raw TIFFs. TIFFs, if you're not an old school computer user, it's a sometimes uncompressed image format, but it's also there's a compressed version, which is
It's usually bitmap, so it's compresses very well if it is compressed. And it's the if you scan something as a PDF, it's usually a TIFF within the PDF. But anyway.
That'll be a TIFF JPEG. If it's in a PDF, though, and it won't be big.
Sure.
When I first encountered them, it was when I was doing layouts and so on for ads and such. And it was
400,000 pages. What is that in terms of?
It doesn't seem like enough, man. It doesn't seem
400,000 pages, 2 terabytes? I'm not sure how that works. Anyway, who knows what sort of evidence it is. They're always a bit strange when they try and measure data as pages. It also says that it's the equivalent of that. See, that's not right. Yeah. Because it says... Oh, I see. It says the Associated Press notes the collection of evidence against whatever the hell his name is.
Is this going to get more interesting or less interesting?
Is enough to print the classic novel War and Peace 625,000 times. Now, unless War and Peace is less than one page long, the two numbers in this article don't make sense. But either way, 2 terabytes worth of data, 5% worth of their storage, they just decided to throw it out.
That is just weird. And I hope that the New Zealand police don't have similar problems, because I want actual criminals to be prosecuted and not released because of stupid things like that. Like, we don't have enough filing cabinets. our discs are too small. That's not a reason to let actual criminals go. The only reason to let criminals go is if they are not guilty or if you decide you don't have enough information to proceed with a prosecution or such. If you've got some technical internal problem, you have to fix that.
Yeah.
It's really that simple.
Next story.
Global house prices ease, but not in New Zealand. Congratulations, New Zealand. You're still fucked. According to the Economist, which tracks housing price movements in 21 countries, they said the years that we've had so far, years of dizzying ascents, were coming to an end for much of the world, but not in New Zealand. Of course not! God damn it. New Zealand houses are 66% overvalued behind Canada. When compared to the disposable incomes of New Zealanders, our houses are at least 22% overvalued, sixth on the list. So, pretty bad going, actually. I blame New Zealand real estate agents, and also, I don't know, maybe is part of this because of a lot of New Zealanders go overseas, work in London or wherever, make a bunch in pounds, and then return to New Zealand and are kind of cash rich, and so they can buy up whatever they want. Because it's said that that's why Grey Lynn is so overvalued. It's because returning New Zealanders, who possibly didn't even live in Auckland before, and certainly didn't live in Grey Lynn before they left, they come back with a big wadge of cash in their pocket, and they're just like, I've always wanted to live in Grey Lynn.
Bam. It's weird, isn't it? There's things that, you know, there's measures of house prices versus income and stuff, and New Zealand always fares very poorly in those.
Yeah. Most overvalued houses compared to long-run average, Hong Kong, Singapore, Belgium, Canada, and then New Zealand.
Yay.
Most overvalued house prices compared to rents, Canada, and then New Zealand, second, then Belgium, Hong Kong, then Singapore. Most overvalued houses compared to incomes, Belgium, France, Netherlands, Canada, Australia, New Zealand. Just ahead of Britain and Italy.
Oh, there you go. We're not quite as bad on this as I thought we were.
No, not quite as bad. Pretty bad. Considering we've got a lot of, you know, relatively underutilized land in New Zealand. Although there's, I can't remember what the name of the site was. There was a very interesting site which looked at predictions of like dairy industry and so on.
Yeah, I remember
and,
that one.
And real estate industry stuff. And they drew on a New Zealand map what the usage stats would have to be like in order to meet these goals. And like for dairy to increase, you know, anything like as much as some people would like it to, it would have to be well through the red zone of, you know, seriously overpopulated. It's, you know, permanent damage being caused, and certainly not ecologically sustainable, probably not economically sustainable.
We would be overrun with cows.
That's right. And not anything like as much of an improvement in terms of, you know, average incomes for most New Zealanders, not anything like as much as you might hope as a trade-off for that, you know, permanent damage, destruction, filthing up of waterways and misuse of our land. But so their proposal, that site, I should probably try and figure out what it was. They suggested that we just start. All we need is 200 successful businesses. And that required actually a certain scale and size. And that would provide better results for the majority of New Zealanders than, you know, tourism, dairy, any of the farming stuff, any of the industrial stuff, any of the mining stuff, any oil production, gas production, 200 businesses, exporters, tech businesses and so on, that would do better than any of those other things and be better for New Zealand in the long term. And it would mean, perhaps, that we might have easier access to all of... I mean, if you drive out of a city in New Zealand, you don't have to drive very far to get to, you know, essentially, you know, pretty close to unused land. Right. So why is property so expensive? It's because, of course, you don't want to drive for 2 hours to get to work, obviously. Turn cam off, I'm told. Turn cam off, Dylan. You can just say it out loud. What's the problem?
Oh, I don't know. You're breaking up a little bit to me, and I think you're wasting all that valuable bandwidth sending me pictures of you in your dressing gown.
But you sound fine to me, so I don't care if I'm breaking up to you. Or can you actually not hear me?
No, I can hear you. You know. I don't want to see you.
So what's the problem? So what's the problem? Anyway, New Zealand property prices, there's got to be a correction at some point. That's really what it boils down to. But the predictions in this article are that it's not going to happen. There's someone from...
But see then when the property prices do go down a bit, everyone freaks out.
Yeah.
As I believe, you know, happened not even that long ago.
Yeah.
And now we're back up to record levels. Oh, no, the property it's crisis. We're all doomed. Oh, no. Oh, look, everything's really expensive again.
Yeah.
I always like the stories that come out when someone buys a house for like $10,000. And you're like, oh, wow, someone bought a house for $10,000. There is hope for me. Oh,
it's not going to happen again for a long time.
It's one room and it's in Greymouth.
It was in Invercargill or somewhere.
Completely overgrown.
Yeah. It's not even central Invercargill. And it's leasehold.
Next story.
PM won't comment. Now, let me, before I finish the headline, here is what Corporal Tamatea, what's his first name? Douglas. Corporal Luke Douglas Tamatea, who is a soldier in Afghanistan. He said, if I was leader of a country, I would attend the funerals of our fallen soldiers. I wouldn't be at a fucking baseball game. And he posted on Facebook.
Right.
To his mates. And then, of course, you might recognize the name if you've been paying very close attention. Corporal Luke Douglas Tamatea and two of his colleagues, Lance Corporal Praly Dura and... That's not right. That's one of the people who already died. What was her name? Jacinda something.
Yeah.
Lance Corporal Jacinda Baker and Private Richard Lee Harris were then killed when an IED... exploded, destroying the vehicle that they were travelling in. And so this chap, who was critical of the Prime Minister, is now dead himself. And could you get the Prime Minister of New Zealand to make a comment on it? No, of course not.
Oh, pretty good chance he'll be at his funeral, though.
He will be at his funeral. He said he'll be at his funeral. When asked to make comment on that, which he better be fucking ashamed of his actions. He should have been at those goddamn funerals. John Key said, I have huge...
Yeah, that baseball was a big story back here.
Yeah, no, it wasn't.
No.
No one gives a shit about baseball.
No, especially not Little League.
No. Softball's a much bigger sport in New Zealand than baseball. Key refused to be drawn on commenting on what Tamatea had said, instead only saying, I have huge respect for him. He paid the ultimate price in defence of our country, and he has my utmost respect. What the fuck do you mean in defence of our country?
Yeah, it's an empty platitude, isn't it? It's one of those sort of, you could almost, you know, if you get like a Running a Country for Dummies book, you know, it'd be in there under the chapter what to do when a soldier dies.
It couldn't be any more hollow.
Paid the ultimate price, defending our country, freedom.
You know, defending our country, the last time that was done was when our soldiers fought the Japanese. That's the last time anyone in New Zealand defended our country. Actually, other ways in which New Zealand defends our interests from other, you know, possibly, potentially future aggressive nations is by trading with countries like China and Indonesia, who aren't going to invade us because they don't fucking need to. We already sell them everything we've got, including all of our oil and beef and dairy. No one needs to invade us. We're nice and safe now because we'll sell you whatever you want, probably quite cheap.
Next story.
Your turn.
Oh, wow, you snuck that on for me.
Yeah.
What have we got? Let's go a bit to charter schools.
All right.
So charter schools teaching faith, maybe.
Yeah.
There's a religious organisation, the Manukau Charitable Christian Trust, has expressed interest in running a charter school.
Yeah.
Which will teach things based on God's a program called the God's Word Flow, In God's Word, which is a schooling program.
What?
It's a religiously based curriculum. So in theory, what? I guess it would meet the standards.
And I'm paying for that. That sounds like private school stuff.
Yeah, and so it'll teach the things in the curriculum, but with a religious bent.
So you mean it'll teach things in the curriculum, but made up?
Yeah.
I don't like the sound of this at all. And geez, it was so unpredictable when charter schools were mentioned.
So also interesting, of course, pretty much related to that, and also news came out, I think, on the same day. John Key, on an interview on Radio Remus, said John Banks. Yes, not John. Well, no, probably not John Key. I don't think he believes much, really. John Banks said believe the creation story of Genesis, that God created the earth in 6 days. And he says it's not important. His personal beliefs have nothing to do with his position, which is fine, except he's the one pushing for charter schools, which are essentially the backdoor way into state funding of religious education.
Which is funny because John Banks is strongly against the backdoor.
I need a button to approve that. Let's see.
25 minutes.
This sounds like a really long sound effect.
Right, would have been better, but quicker. Now, interestingly, he also said...
Wait. That's funny, because I've heard John Banks is strongly against the back door. That really went on for a very long time.
That'll come together nicely in the edit, though, won't it? He goes on to say, that's what I believe, but I'm not going to impose my beliefs on other people, especially in this post-Christian society we live in, especially in these lamentable times.
So he is.
There are reactionaries out there, humanists in particular, that overrun the bureaucracies of Wellington and state education. That's right. Reactionaries that don't want you to teach the story of Genesis in schools as the way the world came into being.
Fucking anyway. John Banks. I tell you what. I mean, if he wasn't so successful at getting elected, and I mean, he is such a tool.
The bigger question is, though, do you believe him? Or was he just placating his audience that was listening to him on Radio Rima? I find it very hard to believe anything he says, quite frankly. He's just something. He's a something.
Now, what was the old spud? What was that Prime Minister's name? I can't remember his name.
Jim Bolger.
Bolger, if you recall, he was a bit of a gecko. So if he was talking to Americans, within seconds, he'd have an American accent. Do you think that's what Banks was doing? Do you think he became quite religious?
Not even would I be remotely surprised about that.
Except that we already know, based on the fact that John Banks is a Freemason, that he believes in a higher power. I believe that he is a religious man.
There are atheist Freemasons, essentially, because the requirement for Freemasonry is not
believing in a higher power.
A power greater than your individual self.
There are no atheist Freemasons in New Zealand.
I'm not sure that's... Well...
There are Buddhists. There are Jews. There are Christians. Probably there aren't very many Muslims. There are no atheist Freemasons in New Zealand.
All right. I believe it would be possible to accurately state that you believe in a higher power and yet still not believe in a god, necessarily.
I mean, Freemasons are desperate for more members. I've heard that... They are aging, and they're having a very hard time replacing their numbers in a society that no longer has much truck with that kind of carry-on.
And they've just got a lot of spare aprons and spanking sticks lying around they want to do something with.
Have they got spanking sticks? Maybe I should have a word.
It's my understanding.
Maybe it's... Speaking of spanking sticks, where's my button?
Next story.
Windows 8 is a cognitive burden. According to Raluca Budiu... I'm going to guess that that's not the correct pronunciation, but let's just go with that. User experience specialist from Nielsen Norman Group. That Nielsen would be Jacob. That would be Jacob Nielsen. Who gave an interview to Laptop Magazine. Some design decisions are confusing at best, and at worst, a cognitive burden that slows down the user. This is with using Windows 8.
Yeah.
Budiu used to do research in human-computer interaction at Xerox PARC, the very same company that invented the graphical user interface that Apple then stole, and gives, therefore, a valuable opinion on user interfaces and user experience. I don't know if that, therefore, actually follows from that statement. It's not necessarily true.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know that he was responsible for what...
Exactly.
...what was invented, but he's presumably at least has some pedigree.
Budiu states that the main problem with Windows 8 will be that users will have to deal with two completely different interfaces. That is to say, the traditional Windows desktop interface and the tile-based modern UI. Not only some interactions will be drastically different in Windows 8, but users will have to keep track of which action to use in which environment. Also, oh man, I'm so anxious about this new thing.
And that's essentially the criticism I've heard from elsewhere as well, is that it's just such a drastic change that the things you'd know before aren't really always applicable, and it's hard to know exactly when they will be.
Do you want to know another thing to be a bit concerned about?
Next story.
Windows 8 changes host file blocking. So something that people have done for a long time is modify the host's file to include sites that they don't want to be able to load stuff from on the internet in their web browser. Some people use it to block ad servers. and such, or whatever other domains, they can redirect them as well to other IP addresses. So if you want to do tricky local stuff on your network, generally you can use the hosts file. Guess what? Windows 8...
pretty handy for local development.
Windows 8 modifies the hosts file. It removes sites that it decides shouldn't be in there, regardless of whether the file is marked read-only or not. Windows 8 will modify it.
Handy.
Yep, it clears it out. It does whatever the fuck it wants. Why? I mean, this is a sort of fight. I don't understand why you'd do that. Why would you do that?
I don't know.
What is the advantage to Microsoft of getting that wrong?
I don't know.
It's just stupid.
I imagine it's trying to work around the way some people try and defeat certain DRM strategies.
Yeah.
And it's a very big hammer for a very small problem.
Yeah. Speaking of big hammers and small problems.
Next story.
Who cares? Asks the Harvard Business Review. Who cares if Samsung copied Apple? The web has been alight this past few weeks with the details of the Apple versus Samsung lawsuit. It's been a unique opportunity to peer behind the curtain of how these two companies operate. And I've got to say, Apple, god damn, they're bullies. If they were in the position through the 90s that Microsoft were in of being super dominant, can you imagine how bad things would be?
We may not have to imagine. We're heading that way.
Well, possibly. As the trial seeks to answer the question, did Samsung copy Apple? There's actually another question. Regardless of whether the court said that Samsung copied Apple or not, would we all be better off if we allowed companies to copy one another? Apple didn't stop innovating after Microsoft allegedly stole their look and feel. If you remember the court cases back in the 90s, when Windows 95 was supposedly, and Windows 3.1 probably even, was supposed to have copied system, I don't even remember what the number was back then, 5, 6?
Yeah,
the Mac OS. Apple claimed that they innovated the graphical user interface, but I mean, everyone knows that they didn't. It was Xerox. Everyone knows that it was Xerox.
It's ridiculous because there's no way Apple could ever sit down in a courtroom and testify that they didn't copy anyone else for their designs.
That's exactly right. But Apple didn't stop innovating after they reckoned that Microsoft had stolen from them. So they said, we innovated in creating the graphical user interface. This is a quote. We innovated in creating the graphical user interface. Microsoft copied us. If our competitors simply copy us, it's impossible for us to keep innovating, they said. Apple lost that case. But the thing is, what happened after that? Apple said, it's impossible for us to keep innovating if other people copy us. Then Apple did what? They came out with the iMac. They came out with OS X. They came out with the iPod. They came out with the iPhone. They came out with the iPad. They came out with a whole lot of different software packages. No innovation was affected whatsoever. If anything, they've had the most innovative period they've ever had.
Maybe it's coming true now because since the iPhone came out, they haven't really innovated.
iPad?
Yeah, okay. iPad, iPhone.
Mac App Store?
Maybe. It's not really innovation. It's just an extension of what they'd already done with the iPhone.
Well, I mean, I think probably all of that stuff is really evolutionary rather than revolutionary. Let's be honest about the iPod. It was just a better MP3 player in a market which already had MP3 players, yep. Right? The iPhone didn't invent cellular telephones. It didn't invent touch screens. Apple didn't invent multi-touch. We saw multi-touch demonstrations, I think, and I still think it was out of Microsoft Labs. I'm not sure if that's true, though. I think it was actually a TED presentation of a great big multi-touch interface demonstration, I think in about 2005, 2004 even, long before rumours, or certainly long before I saw any rumours of multi-touch stuff on the iPhone coming out of Apple, they didn't innovate any of that. What they did was improve. They evolved everyone else's work. And I'd say, you know, in many ways, they're still ahead of everyone else. Sometimes because they lock up manufacturers so that they can't provide to other people. I think that the reason that they seem so far ahead with their touchpads on their laptops is that they buy all of the touchpads that their provider can manufacture. So no one else can use it. So everyone else is trying to play catch up with, you know, maybe second-rate manufacturers, which is a very smart move, you have to say. But so if this is what happened, this you know, incredible period of innovation happened after, you know, they claimed Microsoft had destroyed any motivation to innovate at all within their organization, then why are they worried about Samsung? What's the problem?
It's nothing about innovation. No, it's just about crushing competition.
That's exactly right. This is an anti-competitive lawsuit.
Yeah.
And that's the way they appear to be working right now. Of course, it's not just Apple, but weaponry is doing that same thing. Yeah, it's an arsenal, isn't it?
And it's mutually assured destruction again. You have to have patents that can fend off people who might attack you.
And speaking of behaving badly,
next story.
This one's from The Verge. Apple again displaying third party podcast apps in desktop iTunes search. So for a while, if you searched for podcasts in iTunes, guess how many apps you got to see? Just one. Only one from Apple.
And it's got some problems. I mean, a podcast I listened to recently completely changed the way they release show notes because the Apple podcast app didn't support the way it had been done before.
Hey, guess what? We're 55 minutes into the show.
Great.
We've got a bunch of things we have to do.
All right. I'll see if I get any more stories I want to read. I got one. Megadeth frontman says
no,
the Barmer
no,
stage.
No, 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 no. No more stories.
Best of
Twitter's
life
breaking
hacker.
Twitter.
No. Thanks. No.
Best of life hacker.
Make a solar-powered battery charger out of a playing card. And you'd say,
holy shit.
Oh, my God, that's amazing. You can make a battery charger out of a playing card. I mean, obviously.
What do you need? How does it work?
Is
lemons involved?
All you need is a playing card.
Yep.
And an AA or AAA battery, a rechargeable one.
Rechargeable one, yeah.
And that's all you need. Also, you need some super glue.
Sure.
That's all. Also, you need some copper tape.
Okay, well, that's conductivity. Yeah, that makes sense.
Some small magnets.
Okay.
And some solar cells.
Oh.
Also, a Schottky diode and an indicator LED.
Oh, okay. So
that's all you need, and then you can make a solar-powered battery charger out of a playing card. And soup from a stone just takes a stone.
With a solar cell.
Right. What's your next thing? What are you doing?
Want to do Urban Dictionary?
Urban Dictionary. Word of the week.
Heads or tails?
Heads.
Heads. Good choice. Your word is masturbate.
Masturbate. I know exactly what that is.
M-A-S-T-E-R. Oh, no, just go. Yeah, whatever.
M-A-S-T-E-R.
Yeah, B-A-I-T.
Master. B-A-I-T. Masturbate.
Masturbate.
This would be something you do when you are fishing. I think when you, possibly it's got something to do with the way you chop the bait and apply it to the hook. Obviously, that's what it is. Masturbate.
You're actually really close.
Thank you.
Masturbate is a particular lure, used in the sport of fishing that has
We've
a superior
a
quality above others in
We've
its
class.
We've
got a winner. We've got a winner.
I'll take it!
I better win now. I've been masturbating all day long.
We've got a winner.
I'll take it.
Corrections.
No, already did that.
Let's open up the two.
No, not going to do that.
What's your auntie been talking about?
What's your auntie been talking about, Dylan?
My auntie's been talking about Dirk Gently.
Dirk Gently, holistic detective agency. It's a Douglas Adams story from ages back.
It is. And
obviously, because he died ages back.
I'm going to say BBC made a TV series of it.
Yep.
Just a three or four part, I think, in a pilot, so four parts.
Yeah.
Hour long. Without being able to describe it better, I'd just say it's kind of Sherlock-y.
I would describe it slightly differently. Now, while it has a 7.9 out of 10 on IMDb, it stars Stephen Mangan from Green Wing and probably other things. And it is shit.
You don't like it?
No.
I quite enjoyed it.
Tell me why you like it.
See, this is the thing. I'm not very good at being a critic because I can just sit down and watch. It's like Newsroom. People have lots of reasons not to like the Newsroom. I just sit down and watch it and I quite enjoy it.
I enjoy it as well, but you know what I enjoy more? Breaking motherfucking Bad! Oh my God!
Have I told you how many episodes of Breaking Bad I've seen?
Zero.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, Breaking Bad, it's so good. It's so very, very good. Now, another show I've also seen Dirk Gently. Hotel Hell. This is Gordon Ramsay's new series.
One minute.
Along the lines of Kitchen Nightmares, I think, where he goes to a restaurant that is, performing badly and almost
it's
always...
It's terrible. The person who runs it doesn't understand why. The chef doesn't know what he's doing. There's conflict among the family. They
swear
and they argue
and then it all
works out well.
The fridge is full of rotten food and the the table service is bad and the restaurant area looks horrible and so on.
The fridge is really poorly looked after and there's horrible rotten food.
This is the same thing, but it's whole hotels. So it's hoteliers and inns and it's also got kitchens and it's got, you know, entryways and it's got parking and it's got all of that. And it's basically, it's the same thing. It's exactly
the same
thing.
Didn't we have a New Zealand show about motels that was a bit like that anyway?
Don't remember. Maybe.
There was a New Zealand show about
Dylan.
Motels. Yeah.
Go to discourse.co.nz/VPN. It's surprisingly inexpensive.
Good idea. I'll do that.
Do we have anything else we want to get to? Are we going to do an overflow? We've got heaps more stories. Next week we'll probably have Bernard Hickey from Interest CoNZ. He's going to talk about journalism, OrganZ. Let us know if you have questions for him. Thank you for listening. Love you. Goodbye.
Bye.
You're listening to the weekly show on with course.
Right, we're using that one.
Tune in right now for the extra large extended edition. Available on discourse.co.nz or in your iTunes if you're already subscribed to the weekly show.